We'll dedicate this year to the memory of Aaron ben Shlomo, Alav HaShalom. So it is the Yahrzeit, the Azkara, the day when traditionally we understand this is the Yahrzeit of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, the author of the Zohar. And so in honor of that, we're going to study a little bit of Talmud about Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, called Rashbi. He is also, whenever the Talmud says Rabbi Shimon, which is very often, that is Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. Oh, yeah. That is the same Rashbi, yes. But sometimes it uses his full name.
What would be the period?
Sorry?
The period of...
This was the second century of the Common Era. Yeah.
That's 2,000 years ago, almost.
Yeah, 1850 years ago, something like that. So this is from Tractate Shabbat. So we're looking at the first page, it's just in English. With the Talmudic passage. Then hopefully we will study a little bit of the Zohar, which we have in the second page. It's actually a passage which is said very often in the Sfadi custom, or some Sfadi customs, and it's said by the Chassidim on Friday afternoon. And it's a very interesting passage from Tikkuni Zohar. So first of all, let us look at this passage from the Talmud. Now, why is he? Do you see this?
Yeah.
Page 156. Why is he, Rabbi Judah, the son of Rabbi Eli, called the first speaker on all occasions? Right. I didn't bring the Hebrew text. Do you have it? I'm sorry. Looks so faint. Yeah.
Oh, thank
you. So it's telling a story here. Rabbi Judah, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, and Rabbi Shimon, that's Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, were sitting together. And there was another Yehuda, Ben Gerim, a son of proselytes, was sitting near them. Now, the first Rabbi Yehuda commenced the discussion by saying, "Na manaim maasei, how wonderful are the works of this people." That means the Romans. They've made streets, they built bridges, they've erected baths. Of course, the Roman baths, that's a famous concept. They were very good at organizing hot water. Rabbi Yossi was silent. So you see, Rabbi Yehuda, that's Rabbi Yehuda, but Rabbi Eli, Rabbi Yehuda, the son of Rabbi Eli. He said how wonderful the Romans are. Rabbi Yossi kept quiet, and Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai answered and said, "What are you talking about? All they made for themselves. They built marketplaces to set harlots in them. They made baths to rejuvenate themselves. Bridges to levy tolls and make money." Okay, so that was the discussion of these three rabbis. Yehuda ben Gerim, Yehuda the son of proselytes, went and told over what they said. Now, one way it's explained, as Rashi says, you see footnote 3, without evil intent, he just told his parents. The trouble is, his parents weren't Jewish. Or no. They were proselytes, but they had other people whom they knew who weren't Jewish, and so therefore it somehow reached the government. It wasn't kept in a secret circle, and the talk that these three prominent rabbis had been saying reached the government. They decreed Yehuda, who exalted us, should be exalted. And so that's why Rabbi Yehuda, the son of Rabbi Eli, he now becomes the first speaker. He's a very prominent man. Like the office of chief rabbi in Britain, we feel it less today, but originally it was very much the British government was involved. The British government had their own candidates at certain points. Now we're less aware of that dimension of it. But so Rabbi Yehuda, he was given some kind of position like this because he was so generous in his thinking about the Romans, so therefore he should be in a high position. Rabbi Yossi, who was silent, should be exiled to Sepphoris. And Shimon, who criticized the Romans, he should be executed. So that's the result of this discussion, as it's being reported here. So he and his son went and hid themselves in the Beit HaMedrash. They went and hid. And his wife brought him bread and a jug of water. And so she kept them alive. Then he became worried. He became worried they would somehow torture her, and they would take her and torture her. If she knew where he was, she was liable to be tortured in order to expose where he is. So he said, you know what, let's go away altogether so no one will know where we are. So they went away, far away, and they hid in a cave. So that's Rabbi Shimon and his son Rabbi Elazar. A miracle occurred, and a carob tree and a water well were created for them. Okay, so here you see the sort of mystical dimension, you know, that the well of water and the carob tree, it suddenly grows and there's the well, and now they're able to live. So there's a custom tomorrow to eat carobs, if one can get...
Charuvim.
Yes.
Charuv.
Yes, yes.
I loved it.
So the enterprising grocers, green grocers in Stamford Hill, the Jewish ones and also the Muslim ones, they will be carrying carobs tomorrow day.
Charuv.
It's like
brown, crescent, flat. Like
it's brown and it's like a green runner bean, but it's brown and it's stiff.
Flat, and it's flat.
Yeah. Yeah, but like runner beans.
But it's
like
a bit blended, no?
Yeah, and you break them, yeah. And it tastes a bit like licorice.
But why Muslims do you
say? It's very, and very...
To sell to the Jews.
It's very, very...
Yes, that's right. They know all the Jewish holidays. They have bitter herbs when it's Pesach, and they have carobs when it's
Lagom. Do you know where Kosher Kingdom is? Yeah. Before, it used to be Raj.
Yes, that's
Raja.
Right.
Raja.
Yeah. It was
a kosher everything, an enormous amount of delicatessen, but it was Indian, and yeah. They weren't Jewish.
That's right.
But they would...
And they undersold.
They would close on Chagim and Shabbat, and so they would have the whole of God's green there.
Yes.
It's the same with the Muslims in
Stamford. So the Muslims in Stamford, they're not familiar with the Jewish calendar.
Yes.
Well, there's one particular shop that's really, they've done their homework. there are quite a few different religions in Stamford Hill. They may have done their homework for every religion, but I only noticed the Jewish. That's an interesting thing.
12 years.
So, there they are, hiding in a cave, and there's a carob tree and water. So now they studied Torah. There's an interesting discussion about what Torah did they study. Did they study only mystical teachings, or did they study the Talmudic? See, in their days, the Mishnah had not yet been written. The Mishnah was written in the next generation by Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. And in their days, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, when he wrote the Mishnah, do you know how many orders the Mishnah has?
Six,
that's right. It comes up in the Echad Miyodeya.
Yeah, I was just thinking.
That's right. Shisha Miyodeya, Shisha Sidrei Mishnah. Who knows six? The six orders of the Mishnah. Now, before Rabbi Yehuda, there weren't six orders. There were 600. It was a vast work with... it was the way it's spoken about is 600 orders.
Rabbi Chiya was one of the people that what was the word?
Condensed
it and organized it. His name appears very often.
Yes, Rabbi Chia, I think it's the Tosefta. So they studied, partly they studied mystical teachings and partly they studied the halachic teachings of the Mishnah. Even when they were studying the halachic teachings of the Mishnah, they studied in a mystical way. So there they were, a very intense mystical frame of mind.
What's the significance is to say that they would strip their garments and sit up to their necks in sand?
The point is that when they wanted to pray, they wanted to have proper clothes in which to pray. However, the clothes would wear out. So they would sit up to their necks in sand while they were studying. And then when they want to pray, they would come out and they would put on the clothes. So over a 12-year period that they stayed in the cave, the clothes weren't used that much and they didn't wear out. Otherwise, if they were wearing them all the time, they would just be in tatters. So it's an interesting practical detail. So they stayed 12 years in the cave. Now then Elijah came, Eliyahu HaNavi. Now Elijah is a very significant figure in terms of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, because the teachings of the Zohar, where did Rabbi Shimon get them from? So the explanation is from Eliyahu HaNavi, from Elijah. So it's a kind of a prophetic process of the revelation of Elijah coming and communicating mystical Torah teachings, and that is what Rabbi Shimon has to put in the Zohar. That's the way it's understood. Quite a number of rabbis have Gilui Eliyahu. Elijah's revealed to them in the Talmud. The Talmud describes quite a number of people to whom Elijah is revealed, or sometimes stops being revealed. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Elijah would be revealed to him, and then he did something which, although halachically correct, in other ways it was questionable, and so as a result, Elijah stopped being revealed to him. So the concept of the revelation of Elijah is an interesting thing. So Elijah came and said, who will inform Ben Bar Yochai, the son of Yochai, Rabbi Shimon, that the emperor is dead and his decree is annulled? So they emerged. Okay, so now we have a fascinating account of a sequence of ways of perceiving the world from a mystical perspective. Because here they're coming out of this cave with an absolutely burning, flaming intensity of bonding to the divine. In the Zohar, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai says, "Bechad katirna it katana, I am bound in one knot together with God. I am bound in this knot, I'm burning, I'm flaming, I'm flaring up," like a very great intensity. So they came out, and they saw ordinary people plowing the fields. And Rabbi Shimon said, what are they doing? They forsake eternal life and they're involved in temporal life. Look at this. They should just be contemplating God. What are they doing plowing the field? How could a person do such a thing? Well, they had a very, very intense, they were in a very intense spiritual mood. Whatever they cast their eyes on immediately burst into flames.
What burst into flames?
The thing that they looked at.
Oh, golly.
Yes, so they looked at something, it would burst into flame. So it's as if they've come with a look which comes from another realm, a spiritual realm, where ordinary physicality can't exist. And they see people doing ordinary things, and they look at it, and it bursts into flames. Thereupon, a heavenly voice came out and said, have you come out to destroy my world? Chizru lemaratchen. Go back to your cave. What are you doing coming out to setting everything on fire? Go back to your cave. So they then went, they stayed in the cave another 12 months. And they said, the punishment of the wicked in Gehinnom, in hell, is limited to 12 months. So surely we shouldn't be punished more than 12 months. Isn't it enough that we should be in this cave another 12 months? Now, it's interesting. This is why we say Kaddish for only 11 months. Because we don't want to say that the idea is that when we say Kaddish, we're keeping the person that we're saying Kaddish for, we're keeping that person's soul out of Gehinnom. But we don't want to say that this person was a Rasha, a wicked person who has been judged for 12 months. So we only say Kaddish for 11 months.
And then? You don't say it anymore.
Then we stop in the first year, and then we say it at the Yahrzeit.
Just at the Yahrzeit?
Yeah, just at the Yahrzeit.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So for 11 months Kaddish is said, and then on the Yahrzeit. So now a heavenly voice came out and said, okay, go out of the cave. So now they've come out of the cave, and there's the question, how are they going to relate to the world? Before, when they were in the cave and they came out, there was this intense mood of spirituality and they saw people working. They couldn't tolerate it, and everything burst into flames around them. Now, wherever Rabbi Elazar, the son, is still in the same intense mood. He looks at things and they burst into flames. He has the same approach that they had the first time. But his father, Rabbi Shimon, has moved on to another stage. Rabbi Shimon healed those places. So in other words, Rabbi Elazar looked at that, the thing, and it burst into flames, and Rabbi Shimon would look at it and the flames would go out. So Rabbi Shimon now had the power of healing. Rabbi Shimon said to his son, my son, you and I are sufficient for the world. In other words, it's enough that you and I are in this sort of intense spiritual mood, and other people will do ordinary work and plow the fields and do everything normal. You and I, we're on this spiritual level. So this is a second position. The first position is they're so intense they can't tolerate anything ordinary happening. Now, they're still in a very intense state, but they recognize other people, Rabbi Shimon recognizes, other people have to do ordinary things, and so, okay, don't worry these other people, don't set anything on fire, but you and I know the truth. That kind of feeling. But now we come to a third step. On Erev Shabbat...
I like the footnote here for sufficient for the world. It says, not to be taken literally.
I don't know what that means.
Neither do I. But it's not here.
And it's not a quantity, really. The 7 or 8 mountain that is sufficient for the world.
Yeah. I can't understand this author. Not to be taken literally. The point is that their perspective, they are like the tzaddikim who have this exalted perspective.
As long as they're around, nobody else has to.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you don't expect ordinary people to be so burningly dedicated to the divine. They live ordinary life. However, then comes another step. On the eve of the Sabbath, before sunset, they saw an old man carrying 2 bundles of hadassim, of myrtle, running at twilight. He's running home. What are these for? They asked him. They're lechavod Shabbat. In the honor of the Shabbat, he said. So why do you have 2? Why don't you just have 1? He says, one is for Zachor and the other for Shamor. The same reason why we have 2 Shabbat candles. The Ten Commandments appear twice in the Torah. Once in Parshat Yitro, in Exodus, and the other time in Parshat Ve'etchanan, in Deuteronomy. So there's slight or considerable differences in text between the two sets of the Ten Commandments. And one of the differences is, in one it says, remember the Sabbath day, Zachor et Yom HaShabbat. Mm-hmm. And the other one it says, Shamor et Yom HaShabbat, guard the Sabbath day. So the sages tell us that the two words were said at the same time by God when he gave the Ten Commandments. And so Shamor and Zachor, they are simultaneous, guard and remember. And so we have two Shabbat candles, that's part of the background to that. And so here, this person has got two bundles of fragrant myrtle, hadassim, in honor of the Shabbat. So when they heard this, Rabbi Shimon said to his son, see how precious the commandments are to the Jewish people. And then their minds were tranquilized. At this moment, they realized the beautiful quality of the mitzvot, and they felt this is a wonderful thing. So in that way, it is this recognition of the mitzvot which helps them see the way that intense spirituality is in fact expressed by the daily mitzvot of Judaism. And it's those daily mitzvot of Judaism which help us to mediate the intensity of the divine. So really, we are exposed to the infinite intensity of the divine. And through the fact of us keeping mitzvot, Shabbat, Kashrut, prayer, all the other mitzvot, studying Torah, these are ways in which we somehow mediate that intensity and we're able to contain it. You see, the problem is, what happens if you have intense fire, the intense fire of spirituality, and no vessel which can contain it? So this is what was bothering Rabbi Shimon at the beginning. It's as if he's come out of the cave the first time with a tremendous fire, and he couldn't see how it could fit with ordinary life. The fire was burning. There was nothing to contain the fire. Then he sees the way people love the mitzvot, and he realized that in the performance of the mitzvot, there is the fire and also the vessel containing the fire. That's an interpretation I would give of this to help us understand what is this step that we are seeing. So that's a passage about Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai in the Talmud, showing a sort of, you know, mystical interactions between him and God in different ways. The carob tree in the spring appearing miraculously. The way that Elijah is there giving them messages. God is telling them, go into the cave, go out, go back into the cave.
Who else had a carob tree? Jonah.
That was...
In the desert?
The Kikayon.
Carob.
Yeah, a gourd tree, yes.
Yeah, probably.
A gourd tree. But there is also Rabbi Hanina ben Dosa. So it says in the Talmud, Kol ha'olam nizan bishvil Hanina b'ni, the whole world is fed for the sake of Hanina, my son, who is such a great person, and he himself, dai lo bekav charuvin, and for him himself it's enough, a bit of carobs and a pitcher of water. So the whole world is fed by his merit, but he himself just has some carobs and water. So carobs and water is seen as the sort of minimal diet, and one that one can survive on and dedicate oneself.
Carob was also involved in the Honey and the Girl story?
It could be, but I can't remember where it figures there.
So refresh our memory. So what is the connection between Lag BaOmer and Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai?
It's his Yahrzeit. It's the day he passed away. So that's called the Hilulah. You see, in the Zohar, in Parshat Masor, there is what's called the Idra. or the Idrot. Now, Idra means a room, a hall. And it was a hall where the Chavraya, the disciples of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, had gathered together with him. And all night he taught Torah, and in the morning his soul expired. He passed away. So it was a luminous passing away.
I thought we studied the Hidra or Hidra Rabba in Shavuot, no?
No.
No.
No. So it was a very luminous passing away, and so the day of his passing away is called the Hilulah, like the wedding of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Why the wedding? Because it's at this point that the soul ascends to join the divine. And when there's a yahrzeit every year, the same way that the soul ascended the first year from the plane of this world to a higher plane, so every year the soul ascends to a higher plane on that particular day. And that brings out the force of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Now, in the Tanakh, it mentions the idea that when someone has passed away, when a king has passed away, they make a kind of a bonfire. Mischafot abotecha, the burnings of your ancestors. The idea of some kind of burning. Now, this seems to be not a custom that was always approved, of taking objects and burning them, maybe objects that belong to the dead person or other objects. It's, you know, it's a kind of a way of expressing a grief or involvement with this departed person. And I think the rabbis were basically against the idea in terms of destructive burning. Right, Jews are very practical people, and there's a concept, Bal Tashchit, do not destroy. So vandalism or just destroying a good thing is looked at in a negative way, very, very negative way in Jewish thought. However, this bonfire concept was transformed, it seems, in the Middle Ages into a way of celebrating and expressing the sense of connection with Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. People would go to Meron, where he's buried, and on Lag BaOmer, and there would be various ways of expressing this special day, as there are today. One of the ways is that little children, little boys, whose third birthday was after Pesach, between Pesach and Lag BaOmer,
will have his haircut.
That's right. They have their first haircut.
Some
get
it a little bit earlier.
Well, if the birthday was before Pesach,
have it done.
What?
Oh no, that is okay. The fringe. I did ask Tali. Sorry.
That's an aspect of the day, but also it's recognition of the whole concept of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, the mystical dimension of Judaism. So it is said about Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai that in his day the rainbow wasn't seen. The rainbow appears as a result of the covenant, the Brit that Hashem made with the world. At the time of the flood, after the flood, God made a covenant he would never bring another flood. And it will be, he says in Sefer Noach, that if I will be angry with the world, then there will be the sign of the rainbow, and that will remind me of the covenant not to bring another flood. So the saying about Rabbi Shimon is that his greatness was so extraordinary, it's as if he was the sign of the rainbow himself. So in his day, the rainbow wasn't seen. God didn't have to show the rainbow in order to remember that he wouldn't bring another flood, because Rabbi Shimon was already there. As a result, in Poland in the 19th century, I don't know what happens here exactly today, people would get bow, I think the same kind of thing. People would get bows and arrows, the children in school, and they would be taken on an outing into the woods, and they would shoot arrows at various things. It could be that today as well, there are outings. I mean, what is a very general thing in the traditional community is outings on Lag BaOmer, taking children into the woods, to playgrounds of different kinds, and giving them a good time.
What's the significance of shooting bows and arrows?
Well, that's the keshet, the bow. The word in Hebrew,
rainbow.
Keshet, means also rainbow.
Oh, okay.
So it's the rainbow and the bows.
Okay.
So we call it that in English as well. But it's very pronounced, the similarity, the keshet.
Lagmo is also associated with Rabbi Akiva, if my memory serves me right.
Now, you see, that's another dimension. The concept with Rabbi Akiva is that there's a mourning period during the time of the Omer. And that mourning relates to the death of the disciples of Rabbi Akiva. Many thousands of disciples passed away during that time, but from a plague, but that came to an end on Lag BaOmer. And so therefore there's a celebration, a joyful celebration, on account that the students of Rabbi Akiva stopped passing away.
That's why we don't get married between Passover and Lag BaOmer.
Yes.
Except on Lag BaOmer.
On Lag BaOmer, many people get married, because then one can do so. Yes. But it's an intensely spiritual experience, Lag BaOmer, which, and in a way, you see, we're coming towards Shavuot, and Shavuot is the time when the Torah was given, the revealed Torah. Lag BaOmer is the giving of the Torah of the inner dimension of the Torah, of the Kabbalistic dimension of the Torah. Okay, so let's have a look at this text, which comes from Tikkunei, the introduction to Tikkunei Zohar, which is another section of the Zohar literature.
Was Rabbi Akiva his contemporary?
Rabbi Akiva was his teacher. Rabbi Akiva was his teacher.
Whose teacher, sir?
Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai.
Was he his teacher?
Yeah, yeah. Now, Rabbi Akiva himself.
Even I knew that.
Well, I don't remember anything today.
Rabbi Akiva himself had a great thirst to enter on his own account and also to teach others the mystical tradition. And as a result, there were Arba Shenichnutsu Lepades, the four who entered the esoteric dimension. And three of them came to grief. The only one that entered in peace and came out in peace was Rabbi Akiva himself.
Oh, is it him? It's about him.
Yeah. Now that's Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Shimon, his disciple, another disciple, not one of those four. Rabbi Shimon seemed to have learnt the intensity of, we saw in the Talmudic passage, we saw the way his own experience of the intensity of the Kabbalah put him in a dangerous position, and then finally he was able to see that through the observance of mitzvot everything fits in the right way. You're able to contain the intensity of the awareness of the divine, the awareness of the spiritual. So here we have a very striking passage from Tikkunei Zohar. So this I'll read in Hebrew, in Aramaic, and translate it. Patach Eliyahu. Now again, we have Eliyahu, Eliyahu Navi, who is the one who is communicating these teachings. In Tikkunei Zohar, it's more obvious that it's Eliyahu Navi who is communicating the teachings. Va'amani said, Ribon Almin, Master of the world. Da'ant huchad v'lo b'chushvan. You are one beyond number. See, there's one, which is a number, like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So one implies 2 and 3. But God's oneness doesn't imply any other number. It's a oneness, it's a singularity. See, the word singular. Singular means it's the only thing in any way like that. How do we translate, Hero Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one? So, does that mean there's the God who is one and another God who is two? Does it mean there's some sort of hierarchy of gods? No. It means there's only God. Not only God is the only God, but it means God, there is only God in existence. That's what existence really is, godliness. And everything else is a kind of a veiling of God. That's why we see a world. Ha'olam, meaning world, can be pointed, ha'alem, which is concealment, and so it's through concealment of the divine that the world comes into being, as we see it. So Eliyahu says, Elijah said, you are one beyond number. Antu ilal kol ilayin, you are above all exalted things. Stimal kol stimin, you are hidden beyond all hidden things. Leit machshava tefisa bachlal, thought does not grasp you at all. Now that's a very interesting idea, that God is beyond thought. The infinity of God is absolutely transcendent, beyond any kind of thought. There is a place elsewhere where it says, thought cannot grasp him at all. Aval nitvas iu bidu'uta de liba, but the yearning of the heart, that can grasp God. Thoughts, logical reasoning, cannot grasp God. God is beyond our logical mind. But the heart, the yearning of the heart, that can connect with godliness. Beautiful idea. Do you want to go?
Maybe it's a little... Please continue.
Go away.
So what's happening tonight in Stamford Hill? Close? More?
Yes, school is closed. For most traditional schools, there are outings instead of ordinary school. People come to school, then they go on an outing. So what the Lubavitcher Rebbe instituted, something like 1952 or 53, shortly after he became Rebbe, was a Lag BaOmer parade. You see, the idea of Lag BaOmer is the revelation of the spiritual in an open way. Normally, spirituality is hidden. It's like in a cave. But this is the revelation of it. So how do you reveal it in a public way? So a Lag BaOmer parade typically would be, if it's done well, which is, it's normally done in a more full extent, on when it falls on a Sunday, which quite often it does happen. The last 2 years, 2 years running, it fell on a Sunday. They make floats, and the floats represent different mitzvot. They might have one float with little boys who are having their hair cut. And so the floats express something to do with Judaism, and it's a kind of a public carnival expression of Jewish life, traditional Jewish life. And there's music, there's the idea of not having music during the Omer, but then on Lag BaOmer one can have. So there's music being played. Usually what happens in Stamford Hill is various dignitaries from the local government are invited, the mayor of Hackney and councillors and other people.
And this is not only the Lubavitch, this is other...
No, it's Lubavitch who does it this way. That kind of way, you know, having a Muslim councillor sitting at the Lag BaOmer parade, that's a typical Lubavitch. that's a Lubavitch.
So
cheap.
The others are not involved.
No, they think it's an intriguing thing. But what Lubavitch also has are the mystical teachings about Lag BaOmer. In fact, let me say a little bit about that now, because it is getting late. And I just want to, you see, talking first of all on an academic level. So there's a famous professor in the Hebrew University, Yehuda Libes. And Libes wrote an article called The Mashiach, the Messiah of the Zohar. HaMashiach Shel HaZohar. And he presents this quite convincing argument that the image of Rashbi, of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, in the Zohar, is really a paradigm of a spiritual leader, the kind of spiritual leader whom we later see as a Hasidic Rebbe, as a head of a Kabbalistic circle. And I mean, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is seen as the leader of a mystic circle. Much of the Zohar is about Rashbi and his Chavraya Kadisha, his sacred company, a few rabbis with him, going from one place to another, encountering different people, and every encounter is a conversation, and every conversation is about the Kabbalah in one form or another. It's about the mystical dimension of Judaism, of Torah, of life, of prayer, of spirituality. You know, there are insights into things happening in the other world. There are mysterious stories are told. A very, very beautiful progression. But Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is there as this very, very special teacher. And later on, we see that kind of teacher in, let's say, the Arizal, Rabbi Isaac Luria, and his circle of 26 disciples in Tzfat. That was a similar kind of circle. It could be that in medieval Gerona there was also, circles of this kind around various figures, the Kabbalistic figures who also had such circles. And then you come later to the Hasidic movement. So the image of a Hasidic Rebbe, in quite a number of ways, seems to take itself from Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai in the Zohar. You know, what is the source of this kind of special spiritual figure who more than teaches? It's not just that he teaches people, he inspires people, he connects people to the divine. So, if we look, I want to try to express this graphically. You see, there is an infinite plane, right? An infinite plane, Ein Sof. And then we have the way in which we have creation, we have existence. Okay, so existence is pretty dark. I'm not okay here. We have existence. And then we have, I would say, two images. One is the person, okay, with their own spirituality within them. And the other is Torah teachings, whether we're looking at the written Torah or the books of the oral Torah, Talmud or Mishnah. So we have here Torah teachings. We have here the person. Now, who gives the Torah teachings? A whole lot of different rabbis. Yes, so there's the written Torah, okay, given by Moses. And then we have a whole lot of rabbis who are teaching the Talmud. And we also have the figure of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, Rashbi, which represents the Zohar, the inner dimension of Torah. What he's doing, he's connecting the way in which we understand the Torah with the infinite, with the essence of the divine. So what Rashbi does, and through his inner teachings in the Zohar, he is bringing the Torah. You see, the Zohar is actually phrased as a commentary on the Torah, like the Midrash, like Midrash Rabbah. Midrash Rabbah, you begin at the beginning, it's Bereshit, after 30 pages or whatever, Noach, it goes through step by step. The Zohar does the same. The Zohar just goes Sedra, Parsha by Parsha, Sedra by Sedra, through the 53 Sedrot of the Torah. So it is a commentary on the Torah, revealing the connection that the Torah has with the infinite. The Torah tells a story of Joseph and his brothers. The Zohar will present it in an extraordinary spiritual way that it's teaching us about this and about that. It's a completely different dimension, an inner dimension. And the same with the Talmud. The Talmud speaks about practicalities. Someone has an ox, you have an ox in your field. And somehow your ox got out of your field and it got into another field and it gored someone else's ox and killed it. So now the owner of the second ox comes along and he's very upset. Your ox killed his. Would you mind paying some damages? And so Masechet Bava Kama talks about who has to pay how much and how you sort out the whole thing. Should you have kept your ox tied up? It was wrong for you to let it get out of the field. My ox is a very gentle ox. Or it might be a different case. It might be an ox that has gored several other oxen and should have been put in a stall with a lock on it. So all this sort of very practical detail is discussed in the Mishnah. And the power of the Zohar is that it enters that and reveals a whole spiritual dimension. So Rashbi is revealing the spiritual dimension of Torah. Now, also in his interaction with people, he's also revealing a spiritual dimension, because there we have a person just as he or she is, but in fact there is a deep spiritual power inside each person, and what Rashbi does is he triggers off that power. He triggers off the intensity in the heart and soul of each individual, connecting them to the divine. So that's the force of Rashbi, connecting everything back to the infinite and revealing the infinite in that thing, whether it's the Torah or whether it's people or whether it's life and everything which is happening around them. So that's the power of Rashbi. So the later Rashbi-type figure, a Hasidic Rebbe, would teach Hasidic teachings, which people would study, and be through that study, they would be inspired, they would be connected with the divine. They are connected with the divine. Here, in this early form, we have Rashbi himself in the Zohar and this sort of spiritual teaching of the Zohar. So he's telling us here that thought doesn't grasp the divine at all. Leit machshava tfisa b'chlal. Now, Antu da'apikat, you are the one who brought out asar tikunin, 10 garments. Garments of the divine. What are the garments of the divine? Bekarinen dohon asa sfiran, and you call them the 10 sfirot. That's right. La'anhaga b'hon almin stimin, deloit la'anhaga b'hon almin. To rule, to guide through these sfirot the worlds. Which worlds? Two kinds of worlds. Stimin deloit galyan, worlds which are hidden, not revealed. Ba'almin deit galyan, and worlds which are revealed. Uvahon it kasiat mipnei nasha, and it's through these sfirot that you are hidden from people, because we see the manifestation of the divine in the Sefirot, the kindness of God, the severity of God, the mercy of God, the victory, hod, the grandeur, the dedication, the kingship of God. These are the different sphirot. But behind that is the infinite. You are the one who binds and unifies these sphirot. And since you are within, anyone who separates one from the other, from among these sfirot, it's considered for him ki'ilu afresh bach. It's as if he tried to make a separation in the divine. So the idea of unity, there's the concept, the shein yichud kutcha b'richu u'shchinte. In the Hasidic movement, they began saying, before they conducted any mitzvah or certain prayers, they would say, for the sake of the unity of the divine name. This became an extremely controversial issue. The famous Yecheskel Landau, Nodav Yehuda, wrote a whole tshuva against it. You shouldn't do it. So in Chabad, they made a compromise. It's just said once a day at the beginning of before Baruch Sha'ama, but it applies the whole day through. The other Hasidim say it at every opportunity. So when they're going to count the Omer, they start off L'shem Yichud Kudsha B'richu Shchinteh, in order to unify the Holy One together with the Divine Presence, like the male and female dimensions of the Divine, that they should be unified together. Because everything that we're doing in life is achieving this unity. So therefore, the opposite of unity is separation. So what is sin? God forbid. Sin is doing something which in some way separates that unity. The Torah is an instruction book telling us how to keep all the wires connected in the right way. So if we do an inappropriate action according to the 613 mitzvot of the Torah, what we're doing is we're tearing apart some of the wires, some of the connections. It's sometimes described as a cable with 613 strands. This is a very ancient image, long before telephone wires and literal cable. So there's a cable with 613 strands, like the 613 mitzvot. And if we break a mitzvah, we're breaking one of the strands. So our connection, the connection between the soul and the divine, is weakened. And so then we have to repent, which means tying it up again, you know, making a new connection. And when you tie it up, it becomes a little bit thicker, and you have to put more effort into that area. So there is this image of the Sfirot. V'ilin asa Sfiran, and these 10 Sfirot, in an Azlin Kesidran, they have a certain order to them. Chad Arich, one is long and one is short. V'chad Beinani, and one is intermediary. And these are, as it were, different aspects of the worlds and of the Sfirot. V'antu dan higlon. You are the one who controls them. V'leitman dan higlach, no one controls you. Lo le'ele v'lo le'tata, not above, not below, v'lo mikol sitcha, not at every side. Now, these sfirot have then got, levushin have got garments. And from these garments, souls come to human beings. And there are, and he's now going to describe the way in which what these sfirot actually are called. And he's describing it in terms of a kind of an anthropomorphic image, because our physical form is some kind of reflection of the spirituality of the divine, and our physical form manifests these sfirot as well. Chesed droa yemina, chesed, kindness, is the right arm. Gvura, severity, is the left arm. Tiferet, is splendor, is the body. Netzach, v'hod, victory and submission or splendor, they are the two legs. Yesod, seyuma de gufa, then there's yesod, the conclusion of the body. Ot brit kodesh, the sign of the sacred Brit, the covenant of circumcision, that is called Yesod. Malchut Peh, Malchut is the mouth, meaning the oral Torah. Chochma Mocha, and Chochma is the brain, wisdom is the brain, and that's the thought which is within. Bina Libba, Bina, understanding is the heart, through which the heart understands many things, and these are the hidden dimension, wisdom and understanding. And then you have above, Keter Elyon, the upper crown, which is the crown of kingship, which says from the beginning, the end, and that is the skull where there's tefillin. And there is, within that, is the name Ma. Now the name Ma is a sacred name with a numerical value 45. The word Adam also adds up to 45, right? So if you just look at that, Aleph, Dalet, and Mem. Aleph, Dalet, and Mem. Aleph is 1, Dalet is 4, Mem is 40. So that is 45. Now, there's a way of writing the divine name, that the divine name also adds up to 45. And that's what it has in the following letters, Kazeh. This is like a little note explaining it. Kazeh, Yud, and then He, Vav, He. You see, he's written out the divine name. It's in Rashi letters. Yud, Yud, Vav, Dalet. Now, Yud is 10, Vav is 6, and Dalet is 4. That makes 20. Then he's got the first He. He and Aleph. That's 5 and 1, makes 6. So we got 20 and 6. Then Vav. Vav, Aleph, Vav. Vav is 6 and Aleph is 1. So 2 sixths are 12 and 1 is 13. And then we have He again, which is another 6. So all that adds up to 45. So there we have this spelling, what's called the Milui, spelling out the divine name in full, adds up to number 45, which is the Shem Ma, which has the numerical value Adam. So this is a divine name, a spelling out of the Tetragrammaton in this way, and this is the this special dimension of godliness, the Orach Hatzilut. This is the breadth of the world of emanation. Ve'iu Shakui De'ilana. This is the pouring of life force for the tree. Bedroi Va'anpoi, with its branches. Kamaya Dashke Le'ilana, like water which is flowing into an ordinary living tree. So you have the water of spirituality which is flowing into this tree of the Sphira. V'itrabei bahu shakui, and it grows with this watering. Then we declare to God, Ribon Olmin, Master of the worlds, Antu ilata ilot, you are the source of all sources, V'sibat ha-sibot, the cause of all causes, the Ashkeli Lanaba Hunabiyu, you water this tree with this flow of divine quality. Vahunabiyu ikanishmatal gufa, the flow is like a soul to a body. Diu chayim gufa, it's like life to the body. Uvach le dimyon vidyuknam mikol madde de gavanuva. In you there is no image at all of that which is outside or inside. You are beyond. Uvrata Shemaya Va'ara, you've created heaven and earth. Va'pikot min hon shimsha v'siara, you brought out in them the sun, the moon, v'kochvaya, the stars, mazalaya, the constellations. Uva'ara, and on the earth, ilanin v'dishin, begin to the Eden. You created trees and vegetation and the Garden of Eden, v'isvin, and grasses, v'cheven, and animals, v'irin, and other animals, v'ofin, and birds, v'nunin, and fish. Uvnei nasha, and human beings. So that the upper realms can be known through them. In other words, the whole of creation is ordered that we should know the upper realms and know God. ואיך יתנהגו נילאים בתתיים. And one should know how the upper and lower realms conduct themselves. ואיך ישתמוד על נילאים מתתיים, how the upper realms are recognized as different to the lower worlds, the lower realms, ולית ידע בך כלל. But no one knows you at all. ובא מנך לית ייחודה. And without you, there's no unity. Be'ilai, not in the upper worlds, v'tatayin, not in the lower worlds. V'antish t'moda, you are known. Ilat al-kola, you are the source of everything. V'adon al-kola, the master of everything. V'chol svirai, if la'shem yediya, and each svirai has got its own name. Uvahonit kriyu malachaya, and your angels are called by these names. V'ant, but you, leit lach shem yediyah, you do not have a defined name. V'ant hu mamalik kol shmahan, you fill all their names. There are all these different names of the sfirot, and you, godliness, fill all those different sfirot with all those different names. V'ant hu shlimudichulam, you are the fullness of everything. V'chadant istalik minayu, but when you depart from them, from these sfirot, or from anything in which godliness is there, ishtaru kulushma'an, then all those names are left, kugufab lo nishmatan, like a body without a soul. Antu chakim belo b'chachma, b'chochma yediyah, you are wise, but not with a known wisdom. Antu mevin, you understand, velo b'vina yediyah, but not with a known understanding. Leit lach ata yediyah. In fact, there's no place where we can speak of your knowledge, yet you know everything. So God is beyond everything, and yet he has this wisdom, understanding, and knowledge. Eile li'ishtemoda tukvach v'chilach, but to know your power. Livnei nasha, to make known your power to human beings. Ula'achzal on, to show them. Eich mitnaig alma, how the world conducts itself with dinah v'rachmi, with judgment and with mercy. The tzedek u'mishpat kfum ovdein divnei nasha, because there is justice according to the actions of the children of men, whether good or bad, and there is a reward or punishment. Din yugvura, judgment is severity. Mishpat amuda dem tzita, justice is the middle pillar. Tzedek malchuta kadisha, righteousness is the sacred kingship. Moznei tzedek, the balance of righteousness. Tchein samchek shot, two pillars of truth. Hin tzedek, a measure of truth. Ot brit kodesh, the sign of the holy covenant. Kol ala achzah, all of it is in order to show eich mitnaig alma, how the world conducts itself. But it's not as if we can know your righteousness. The yudin, which is judgment. The irachmi, and we don't know your mercy either. We cannot know any of these measures as they really apply to you because you're so exalted. Baruch Hashem lo'olam. Amen v'amen. Blessed be God forever and ever. Amen.
I have a question. Why is it written in Aramaic?
Well, the whole Zohar is written in Aramaic. And one of the ways of understanding that is...
But this is supposed to be written by Eliyahu.
Well, it's Eliyahu communicating to Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai.
So the Be'er Eliyahu, this book of all...
Tana the Be'er Eliyahu is a very, very interesting work, but it's a different work. Tana de Be'er Eliyahu is written in Hebrew.
In Hebrew, yes.
But that was also a visionary work. It's a fascinating thing. Mili is talking about a book which is mentioned in the Talmud, which is the teachings of Eliyahu. That's how it's described in the Talmud. And around 1600 and something, someone in Prague said, if I remember the story right, he had got a hold of a manuscript of this Tana de Be'er Eliyahu, which was several hundred years old, you know, like an ancient manuscript. and he is going to print it. And there was two printings. There was, but the printer had Gilui Eliyahu as well. In order to edit the book, he also had the revelation of Eliyahu showing him how to edit the book. I think it was the second edition. And so he edited the book, and this is the one that's very popular. So it's the initial thing is somehow the teachings of Eliyahu. And the print or the editor also had a revelation of Eliyahu. However, that is in Hebrew and this is in Aramaic, like so, the whole Zohar.
So the whole Zohar is Aramaic,
Yes.
And was that the language they were actually speaking?
Well, that's the thing. In Israel, at this point, they did speak Aramaic. They didn't speak Hebrew.
Why?
Because they had been in exile in Babylon, and that's the language they learned there, and they came back to Israel speaking Babylonian Aramaic, or some form of Aramaic. I mean, there's the students of language try to say there's Western Aramaic and Eastern Aramaic, in other words, Babylonian Aramaic and Israeli Aramaic. But it's
because the Torah and the Bible is written in Hebrew, proper Hebrew, obviously.
Well, some bits of it are in Aramaic. You see, when people came back in Ezra and Nehemiah, you have, which is people having come back from Babylon, you have whole chapters in Aramaic.
But not of the Torah. Then maybe Nevi'im.
No, the that's in Ketuvim.
Yeah.
No, the five books of Moses, except for a few words here and there.
Yes.
Like when they are making some kind of pact with Lavan, they make a pillar or pile of stones, so they call it a name in Hebrew, and he gives it a name in Aramaic. So there are a few words in Aramaic in the Chamisha Chumshe Torah and the five books of Moses. But in the rest of Tanakh, in the books relating to after the time of the first exile,
so Ezra, Nehemiah, and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
And you, obviously, you understand it, and because you translated it, Aramaic.
Well, it's very easy to learn Aramaic if you follow the custom of on the eve of Shabbat, saying every verse of the Sedra twice, and then the Aramaic translation. That's Targum Onkelos. So this is a widespread custom, and as a result, people learn Aramaic, which is very useful because much of the discussion is in the Talmud is in Aramaic.
Is in Aramaic too.
So in order to be conversant with Talmud, someone needs to have a fairly free familiarity with Aramaic. So there we have a glimpse of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai's teaching, the Zohar passage. Now the Svardim say this very often, at least the Edeni Svardim. They have it written in their prayer book.
It's very beautiful. It's very, and I read somewhere else somebody picked it up in an anthology of his favorite thing, and this was one of them, In English, though not. I didn't see it in Aramaic. The translation is slightly different. It's not exactly, but it's extremely profound. The first few lines.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much, Charlie.